So I want you to just imagine carrying this completely invisible tool with you, like everywhere you go. A tool that's ancient, completely free, and honestly powerful enough to ease your modern anxieties while, tapping into your most primal prehistoric instincts.
Right.
It doesn't require a subscription. You don't need an app for it. It just never leaves your side.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds almost too good to be true, right? But it's literally sitting right under our noses, or, well, actually, inside them.
Exactly. We're talking about your breath, but not just breathing. We're talking about deliberately stopping it. Today, we're doing a deep dive into a really fascinating practice detailed in a blog article by Puru.
Yeah, it's a profound read.
It really is. So on his 57th birthday, Puru wrote this reflection, unpacking an unbroken 2,085-day streak of doing a voluntary breath hold over 2,000 days. And reading through his experience, you quickly realize this isn't like some macho physical flex. He's not trying to build up lung capacity to show off at pool parties.
Oh, far from it. It's really a rigorous journey into human physiology, mental toughness, and just this overarching philosophical approach to living.
Yeah.
In this deep dive, we're looking at the concrete science of intermittent hypoxia, the psychology of ultimate self-control, and how the incredibly simple act of, deliberately not breathing can fundamentally rewire your brain's relationship with stress.
But I think before we get into the massive biological shifts happening inside your cells, we really need to picture what Puru is actually doing. Because holding your breath sounds basic, but his approach has layers.
Right.
It requires zero equipment, no prep. It's totally invisible. I mean, Puru does this in public, and nobody around him even knows it's happening.
Yeah, he adapts it to whatever environment he finds himself in. He might do it lying down on the floor, sitting at his desk, walking down the street, climbing stairs, or swimming underwater. My absolute favorite example from his writing is when he does it during an airplane's takeoff.
Okay.
Yeah. He holds his breath right as the plane accelerates down the runway and crosses that invisible boundary into the sky.
Which honestly sounds terrifying to me. I get enough anxiety during a bumpy takeoff without artificially suffocating myself in a middle seat.
Totally fair.
But that brings up a massive caveat we really need to establish immediately, because deliberately holding your breath can be dangerous if you treat it like a game. And Puru operates with this very strict safety-first motto, outlining what he calls the safe deadly spectrum.
He is incredibly uncompromising about that spectrum.
Wow.
At the safest end, you're doing a dry hold on land, so you're seated or lying down.
Yeah.
You are starting from a relaxed, neutral equilibrium, and crucially, this is important, you are not hyperventilating beforehand. You just take a normal breath and hold it.
And the deadliest end of that spectrum.
That would be, well, hyperventilating to trick your body's oxygen sensors, going underwater entirely alone, and basically pushing yourself past all discomfort until you black out. People drown doing that. Puru vehemently warns against it.
Right. To put this in perspective for you listening, it's like treating your breath as a sharp physical tool. You don't start by juggling flaming machetes blindfolded.
Definitely not.
You start with a butter knife on day one. You hold your breath for just a few seconds while safely sitting on your couch. You build up your tolerance over months and years. You don't jump into the deep end, like literally or figuratively.
Exactly. You learn the weight and balance of the tool before you try to carve anything complex.
Yeah.
And once you do establish that safe baseline, the biological adaptations are just staggering.
Okay, let's get into those adaptations.
Yeah.
Because why would anyone voluntarily subject themselves to the physical panic of suffocating every single day for over 2,000 days? What is actually happening in the body when you just stop breathing?
We are looking at a cascade of biological alchemy. On a purely physical level, you are subjecting your body to brief periods of intermittent hypoxia.
Right.
That simply means a temporary systemic lack of oxygen.
I have to imagine your body's internal alarms start blaring pretty quickly with that.
Oh, they definitely do. But the reaction is highly productive. When your kidneys sense this brief drop in oxygen, they stimulate the production of erythropoietin, or EPO. That's a hormone that basically tells your bone marrow to crank out more red blood cells.
Wait, really?
Yeah. By doing this regularly, Puru is temporarily boosting his VO2 max by up to 5% simply by sitting still.
That is wild. So you're getting an endurance boost without running a single mile? But here is the part of Puru's breakdown that completely broke my brain. Because we are taught from grade school that oxygen is the hero, and carbon dioxide is this toxic exhaust fume we desperately need to expel.
Right, the waste product.
Exactly. But in this practice, CO2 is actually the key to unlocking oxygen for our cells.
It completely flips the script on respiration. It's a physiological phenomenon called the Bohr effect. As you hold your breath, carbon dioxide levels in your blood naturally rise because, well, you aren't exhaling it.
Makes sense.
We assume that's just a toxic buildup. But that rising CO2 actually changes the physical shape of your hemoglobin. You know, the protein that carries oxygen around in your blood.
Okay, let me try to visualize this. Imagine hemoglobin is an armored truck driving through your bloodstream, and the oxygen is the cache locked inside. The oxygen is already there, circulating, but your cells can't get to it.
Yep.
So the rising CO2 acts like the key that unlocks the back doors of the armored truck, forcing it to dump the cache into the surrounding tissues that are starving for it.
That is a brilliant way to picture it. Without the rising CO2, the armored truck just keeps driving right past the tissues. The hemoglobin holds onto the oxygen way too tightly.
Wow.
The CO2 is the chemical trigger that forces the release. And your brain relies heavily on this exact mechanism during a breath hold. It goes into this profound self-protection mode to secure its oxygen supply by aggressively dilating its blood vessels.
The brain just opens the floodgates to let more blood in.
It does. And it's driven by a complex interaction of rising nitric oxide, adenosine, and the opening of ATP-sensitive potassium channels.
Hold on, time out. ATP-sensitive potassium channels. You just threw a textbook at me.
Ha, sorry.
What does that actually look like in my brain?
Fair enough. Think of your brain cells as having tiny chemical panic buttons on their surface. When oxygen starts to drop, these cells can't produce enough energy, which is what ATP is.
Okay.
The lack of energy hits those panic buttons, the potassium channels, and the immediate response is to force the walls of the blood vessels to relax and widen. It's basically an emergency reflex to pull in as much blood as possible.
I see.
So the rise in arterial CO2 essentially becomes a manual control knob for cerebral blood flow. It lowers the pH and forces those vessels open much more effectively than just a lack of oxygen would on its own.
So I'm sitting on my couch holding my breath, and my brain is smashing the panic buttons and opening the floodgates. But paradoxically, my heart rate is plummeting. Puru talks about his heart rate dropping from over 100 beats per minute down to below 30 in seconds.
Right.
If the body is panicking, shouldn't the heart be racing?
You're triggering what evolutionary biologists call the mammalian diving reflex. It's this hardwired survival mechanism we actually share with dolphins and seals.
Oh, interesting.
When you stop breathing, especially if you splash cold water on your face, your body assumes you are diving underwater. To conserve whatever oxygen you have left, the parasympathetic nervous system just slams the brakes on your heart.
So the rest and digest system just completely overrides the fight or flight panic.
Completely. It is an incredibly powerful physiological break. And by practicing this daily, you're essentially going to the gym to train your nervous system's ability to regulate panic, anxiety, and, you know, emotional overload.
That makes so much sense for the immediate moment of the breath hold. But Puru also mentions lasting long-term health benefits. He brings up stem cells and DNA repair. How does holding your breath for 2 minutes help your DNA?
This gets to the concept of hormesis. Hormesis is a biological principle where a controlled temporary shock to the system forces the body to adapt and grow stronger.
Right.
When you induce severe brief hypoxia, it rings a biological alarm bell. Your body thinks, we are under extreme environmental stress. We might be taking damage. Deploy the repair crews.
So it's tricking the body into a state of emergency repair, even though you are perfectly safe on your couch.
Exactly. Those short hypoxic episodes compel your bone marrow to mobilize stem cells into the bloodstream, which research suggests can actually aid in neural regeneration for conditions like Parkinson's or Alzheimer's.
That's incredible.
And the stress also induces the expression of the P53 gene.
Oh, I've heard that called the guardian of the genome.
It definitely earns that title. The P53 gene pauses cell division and repairs DNA damage before it can replicate. By giving yourself this tiny, voluntary dose of suffocation every day, you are constantly waking up these deep-seated repair mechanisms that otherwise might just lay dormant.
A voluntary shock. I love that framework.
Okay.
But that physical shock inevitably creates a psychological wall. Because your body might be repairing its DNA, but your conscious mind is screaming at you to take a breath.
Yeah.
And I think this naturally transitions us from the cellular biology into the mental arena.
Yeah, absolutely.
You are forcing this radical, unavoidable inward focus.
Puru actually describes the breath hold as perhaps the ultimate mindfulness practice. Traditional meditation asks you to sit quietly and observe your thoughts, which a lot of people find difficult or boring because their minds wander.
Right. You try to meditate and suddenly you're thinking about your grocery list or some awkward conversation you had 5 years ago.
Exactly. But during a breath hold, You literally cannot be distracted. It is entirely visceral. It usually begins with a feeling of ease and optimism. But within seconds, that ease morphs into intense discomfort.
Yeah.
It becomes a controlled trauma. Your survival instincts hijack your attention.
He uses this fantastic analogy about observing your thoughts during a hold.
Mm-hmm.
He likens it to riding a bicycle. At the beginning of the breath hold, watching your thoughts is like riding a bike down a gentle, wide, straight slope. It's breezy. It's easy.
Right.
But as the seconds tick by, that slope radically changes.
The path narrows. The incline gets steeper. Suddenly, you're navigating extremely tight, dangerous hairpin turns.
Because that primal hunger to expel carbon dioxide is just drowning out everything else. Your diaphragm might start spasming. Your thoughts get intensely narrow, focused on one single objective, which is survival.
Yeah.
And he talks about observing the physical body in that state, feeling your heart thumping, knowing no fresh oxygen is arriving, and just watching your heart rate plummet without moving a single muscle.
It is your body revealing its automatic, hidden survival mechanisms to you in real time. You're stepping back and watching your own machinery operate under duress.
Which raises an amazing question for you, listening to this right now. If you didn't do a breath hold, how often in your normal, comfortable modern day would you get to observe your own thoughts while your body genuinely believes it's nearing the brink of death?
Probably never.
Never. We insulate ourselves from that feeling. This is the ultimate hack to force yourself into the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
You can't daydream when your check engine light is flashing red.
That visceral anchor brings us to the concept of the edge of choice. The breath hold takes you right up to that thin, uncomfortable line where ease fades, struggle rises, and you really have to decide who you are in that exact moment. Will you panic, thrash around and get up early, or will you maintain grace under pressure?
And mastering that edge of choice doesn't just lower your heart rate, it reshapes your identity. Zooming out from the biology, how does this tiny 2-minute daily ritual build the overarching life philosophy that Puru relies on?
He looks at it through the lens of a high RTI return on time invested. The actual time commitment of a daily breath hold is minuscule. We're talking about maybe 2 or 3 minutes out of a 24-hour day.
Right. Nothing.
But the returns in physical resilience, emotional regulation, and self-mastery are massive, and they compound over time.
And a big part of that compounding return comes from this deeply counterintuitive idea he brings up. Deprivation for joy. We spend our whole lives trying to acquire things, thinking abundance equals happiness. But Puru views the daily breath hold as a philosophical act of voluntary deprivation.
Yeah.
By voluntarily withholding the most essential thing you need, the very air you breathe, you get to study how your mind reacts to absence.
We often equate joy with having everything we want. But Puru argues that joy isn't the opposite of deprivation. It's frequently born directly from it.
Wow.
By choosing to withhold something vital, you learn what truly matters. You learn who you become when comfort is stripped away. I mean, the first breath you take after a 2-minute hold is probably the most delicious, joyful thing you will experience all day.
You appreciate the mundane in a way you never normally would. And he takes that strict discipline and applies it to what he calls conquering consistency, building an ironclad internal culture.
Yes.
The breath hold practice is incredibly small. It's measurable, and it's entirely impossible to fake. You either held your breath today or you didn't. There's no gray area.
His track record definitely reflects that uncompromising culture. Out of 2,085 days, he notes that he missed the practice on only 3 days.
3 days out of over 2,000. That is insane consistency.
And he categorizes those 3 days very specifically as inexcusable. They were due to travel rhythm disruptions related to a trip to Goa. But, you know, the way he frames those three misses is the real lesson here.
He makes a very sharp, almost brutal distinction between a reason and an excuse.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. A reason explains an event objectively. An excuse tries to justify a failure to act. Over those 2,000 days, he traveled the world numerous times, crossed multiple time zones, and never missed his practice. So the chaotic travel schedule to Goa was certainly a reason the rhythm was broken, but he outright refuses to let it serve as an excuse for the failure.
I love this because it's so easy to blur those lines in our own lives. We say, oh, I didn't work out because I was traveling, or I ate garbage because I was stressed at work. And we just accept those as totally valid.
Yeah, we let ourselves off the hook.
But Puro is drawing a hard line. He's saying, no, those are just excuses masking a failure of will.
Mastering this daily, voluntary discomfort, refusing to accept your own excuses, is how you defeat what Puru calls the unholy trinity of human nature.
The unholy trinity. Okay, let me guess. It's our evolutionary drive to avoid pain, seek pleasure.
Yeah.
And what's the third one?
Conserve energy.
Right. Avoid pain, seek pleasure, conserve energy.
That trinity was incredibly useful for keeping our prehistoric ancestors alive in a harsh wilderness where, you know, calories were scarce and predators were everywhere. But in the modern world, where comfort is ubiquitous, blindly following those three drives is a one-way ticket to mediocrity, poor health, and just unfulfilled potential.
Because avoiding pain means you don't have that difficult conversation with your spouse. Seeking pleasure means you doom scroll on your phone instead of sleeping. Conserving energy means you sit on the couch instead of building the business you've been talking about for years.
Exactly. And by holding your breath every single day, you are intentionally confronting all three. You are stepping into pain, denying pleasure, and burning mental energy to maintain focus.
Wow.
You're isolating the muscle of self-control and training it directly. And when that muscle is strong, you finally close the implementation gap.
The implementation gap. That is the frustrating, invisible space between knowing exactly what you should do and actually getting yourself to do it.
We all suffer from it. We all know we should eat better, exercise consistently, save money, be more patient. Knowledge isn't the bottleneck anymore. Execution is. The daily breath hold is a micro arena. It's a daily dress rehearsal for closing that gap. Because if you can force your own mind to withstand the primal screaming panic of a breath hold, you can definitely force yourself to put on your running shoes when it's raining outside.
You prove to yourself that your mind is in charge of your body, not the other way around. So to pull all of this together for you listening right now, incorporating a daily breath hold is completely free, invisible, and profoundly transformative. It trains your nervous system to stay calm under pressure. It boosts your cellular health by forcing oxygen into starving tissues, and it acts as an inescapable mindfulness tool.
But remember the golden rule of Puru's practice. It is not a competition. The magic is not found in pushing yourself to the brink of passing out or setting some world record.
Yeah, Stacey first.
The magic exists entirely in the daily repetition. It is the steady accumulation of self-control and the philosophical grace you develop when facing deprivation by choice.
Puru leaves us with an incredibly powerful parting message in his reflection. He writes, "Master yourself not in grand gestures, but in the quiet daily seconds you choose to hold your breath."
It's the smallest, quietest habits that forge the iron of who you are today and who you'll become tomorrow.
We want to leave you with a final provocative thought to mull over. Think back to that invisible tool we talked about at the very beginning of this deep dive. You are carrying it with you right now. When you try holding your breath today, remember, just a butter knife, safely sitting on your couch, paying incredibly close attention to your internal monologue. Right at that exact second when your brain starts to panic, when it begs you to open your mouth and gasp for air, what's the very first excuse your mind invents to make you quit? Listen for it. And once you hear that excuse, what happens if you simply refuse to listen to it for 5 more seconds?